Well, one rabbi rose from the dead, the other did not, and that has made all the difference.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We are going to have a fascinating, very important, thoroughly Jewish Thursday today. This is Michael Brown. Phone lines are open, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Late this morning, we got word that there was a tornado warning in our community, a county where we live, and then severe thunderstorms came in. I was about to do a Skype interview in India. And I tell the brother, I said, you know, we better reschedule because they just told the community nearby to us to go to shelter. And as I looked up, this massive torrent of rain poured in. But everybody's well, everybody's safe. Just interesting to have something come that close to you. And I think we're past any of the severe weather, so we should be broadcasting without a hitch. If you suddenly hear the sound of a tornado and my voice disappears, well, perhaps it's like chariots of fire coming down from heaven or whirlwind or something like that. No, in all seriousness, all is well. And it makes you realize, though, how frail and fragile things can be. All right, again, 866-348-7884. And just to my team members, you might want to come in and restart my computer, which is completely frozen. All right. Got something really, really interesting to talk to you about. My newest book will be released on March 3rd. The title is Resurrection, Investigating a Rabbi from Brooklyn, a Preacher from Galilee, and the Event That Changed the World. Now, I want to tell you what the book is about in a moment and talk to you about some really interesting Jewish traditions today. But first, I want to give you the background to how the book came to be written. And I want to go back first, well over 25 years. We lived in Maryland, and there was a friend of mine, also a Jewish believer in Jesus, and he was doing his master's work at Johns Hopkins University, and he was studying the historical aspects of Hebrew grammar and things like that. And when we were hanging out, he would come to my home and I would tutor him in biblical Hebrew and aspects of ancient Hebrew and things like that. And because we were in two different groups, we would often have theological debates. We would go back and forth at each other and he challenged me and I challenge him. And you know, I was sure I was right on certain points. Other points, I wondered, could he be right here? Is it possible he's got the right perspective? So One day before he came over, I prayed and I said, Father, if he's right on this particular point, not a fundamental matter of the faith, just a difference within the faith, we're having this debate. I said, if he's right about this one particular point, then when he comes over today, instead of our standard reading of biblical Hebrew texts, instead of going through Hebrew grammar in the Bible and things like that, instead of that, let him ask me, can we study Palestinian Hebrew texts written without vowels? I mean, the likelihood of him asking me that would have been not far from him saying, I'd like us to discuss today the Hebrew roots of the Santa Claus myth. You know, it's just, what? It would have been completely out of the blue. But I happen to have a book that just had Palestinian text, ancient Palestinian text written without vowels. And I had been looking at it, and I thought, okay, I'm going to pray that prayer. Well, he comes over that day, and to my tremendous surprise, says to me, hey, Mike, how about today we study Palestinian Hebrew texts without vowels? That got my attention, and it caused me to go back to Scripture and study that issue once again to see, okay, Scripture is what decides things, not a sign like that. But I was praying, if he's right in his position here, let that happen. And then, so I went back to the Word afresh and studied it again after that point. Okay, fast forward to last year. or a little over a year ago, maybe 15 months ago. We have talked in a period of maybe 25 years about two times, maybe three. Had him on the radio one time, but otherwise we have virtually no contact at all. The rarest of rare of rare. I mean, 15 years could go by with no contact. So what happened was I got tremendously burdened to write a book on this subject, the subject of my book that's about to come out. I got tremendously burdened to write about it. And I was overwhelmingly gripped in prayer one morning. I mean, as gripped as I get, just groaning in prayer and burdened before the Lord and feeling God speaking to me to write a book on the very particular theme of this new book, Resurrection, investigating a rabbi from Brooklyn, a preacher from Galilee, and the event that changed the world. So, so what happened was, as I was praying about this, I go to the office to do the radio show. And guys, looks like my computer is rebooting. I go to the office to our studio here to do the radio show and finish the show. Lo and behold, there's a voicemail from my friend. He called during the show. We have not talked in a long period of time. And again, the last time we talked, if you go back before that, you're talking a stretch of maybe 15 years. So we may have talked a year before and then 15 years before that. It's a voicemail from my friend. And he says to me, Mike, I'm thinking about writing a book. And the book he's thinking about is the exact same theme that I was praying about that morning. I mean, to the detail. And can I recommend any reading on that? Now, ultimately, two different people writing two different books, they'll come out two different distinct ways. But I thought, isn't that wild? There was that supernatural confirmation years and years back in the strangest way. And now, what, like 25 years later, another confirmation like that. Now, the content of the book is fascinating and eye-opening. I believe it's going to be an incredible read for you as a lover of Jesus, as a follower of Yeshua. But it's going to be a phenomenal tool to get out to Jewish people. And I believe it's going to be used in particular to reach religious Jews and ultimately to reach religious Jews in Israel in Hebrew. Every word I wrote as I was writing it, I was thinking about translation into Hebrew, getting it out there. All right, so what's the subject matter? What's this whole thing about? The subject of resurrection is one that I did not focus on in my apologetics writings over the years. I did not make a major issue of it in answering Jewish objections to Jesus. And obviously, traditional Jews and secular Jews that don't believe in Jesus don't believe he rose from the dead. But that was just not a major thing I was going to focus on, because you've got all these great books on the resurrection. And you've got scholars, you know, Gary Habermas and Michael Akona and others that have done such great work on the resurrection. And this has been something where there's been great apologetics work done for many, many years. The whole question of who moved the stone and different things and the reliability of the Gospels and the historicity of the accounts and so on. But I had only commented on a little bit over the years because so many had done what they've done. And in my preaching and teaching, I'm always talking about the death and resurrection of Jesus. Of course. But that being said, the resurrection of Jesus in terms of Jewish apologetics has never been a major focus of mine. So here's what happened. Back in 1994, a man named Menachem Mendel Schneerson, known as the Lubavitcher Rebbe, or the Grand Rabbi of Lubavitch, he died at the age of 92 in 1994. And when he died, there was tremendous expectation among his followers, who numbered in the tens of thousands, that he was the Messiah. Without question, he was one of the most influential Jewish leaders of the 20th century, if not the most influential. Without question, the movement that he built has continued to grow and expand so that his followers are represented in every continent. In every community where there are Jewish people of any number, they are there. They've built schools. They've built synagogues. They've been involved in all types of outreach. And he was allegedly a miracle worker, and he was certainly a brilliant, learned man and an inspirational leader. He allegedly prophesied certain things that came to pass, and so they're looking at him. Could he be the Messiah? Well, then he dies. End of subject, right? Only Christians believe in a dying and resurrected Messiah. Only Christians believe that the Messiah could die before his mission is completed, only to be resurrected to complete his mission after that. That's not a Jewish belief, right? Well, his followers began to rationalize. They began to say, well, his death was just a test for our physical eyes. Now, many said he died. We thought he was the Messiah. We hoped he was the Messiah, but he wasn't. Now we move on, inspired by his teachings, and he's with us present. You know, he's present with us spiritually, and we're inspired by him and his example, and we'll continue his work without hindrance. Okay. But many others said, no, he's really still alive. His death was just a test for physical eyes. Or if you'll go to the grave there in Brooklyn, you'll see he's really not in there if you open it up, if you open up the tomb. Or there were vigils of his followers camped out waiting for him to physically rise. Now here's what's so important. 2019, the 25th anniversary of his death, and you know, a lot of talk about that. Interestingly, his most ardent followers still believe he's the Messiah. Interestingly, if you go to their websites, you don't see that the day of his death is marked as the anniversary of his death. No, because they don't believe he really died. So here's where this ties in with the gospel. Here's where this ties in with Jesus. And this is so fascinating. This is a story I tell in the book. Unpack it, unfold it, even get into Jewish mystical traditions. How do we sort those out? What do we do with that? The idea that the Messiah was born the day the temple was destroyed in 70 AD, and the soul of the Messiah is present in every generation. What do we do with that? Other false messiahs in Jewish history, and what was the expectation with them? Say, okay, very, very interesting, fascinating. Trust me. When you read the book, Resurrection, you'll find it to be a tremendously fascinating read. You say, what's that got to do with the gospel? What's that got to do with resurrection? What's the proof? What's the point that you're making? Ah, that's what I'm going to explain to you on the other side of the break. And then I want to take your calls. I want to give you an update about extreme anti-Semitism in Christian circles today, and give you some sobering news about terrorist attack in Israel recently. 866-348-7884. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to the broadcast. If you have a Jewish-related question, comment, 866-34-TRUTH. All right, still trying to resolve one computer issue here so I can properly interact with your calls. But back to the subject of resurrection. Let me just tell you, if you want to pre-order a signed, numbered copy of the book, it is due out on March 3rd. All right, if you'd like to order a signed, numbered copy, all right, so moment the book comes in, you'll get it. We number them, I sign them, we send them out. So it's just something special that we do that a lot of our folks enjoy. And I love to sign them, put a scripture reference in them, but they're all signed by me, scripture reference, they're numbered. So you get, you know, number 100 or number 60 or number 3. And if you'd like to do that, go to our website, askdrbrown.org, and you'll see it right on the homepage. Or you can, if you want to take advantage of a special offer from the publisher, an amazing offer, where you get the ebook free, and you get the Jezebel's War with America ebook free, and Playing with Holy Fire ebook free, and Secrets of the Real Messiah, Seven Secrets ebook free, and then a free audio message and a free video message, over $70 of free material. Go to drbrownbooks.com. drbrownbooks.com. This is a special offer from the publisher. And then wherever you order, Amazon or any of the online book dealers, Christian Book, etc., you order from any of them and then send it in, and boom, you get all these when the book comes out. So, all right, back to the significance of the expectations about Lubavitcher Rebbe rising from the dead. What's fascinating is that with all the claims that he's with us spiritually, if you go to their headquarters in Brooklyn, you'll still find his most devoted followers claim, yes, he's right here in our midst now. Yes, he's at that, he's in his chair now. And in other words, we can sense it spiritually. With all of that talk, with confessing him as the Messiah and doing everything that they do on a regular basis, with all of that, they still never claimed that he physically rose from the dead and that anyone saw it. To this day, with many Jews would say they're fanatics. Even within the movement there's a great divide, because the vast majority of them will not publicly say, we believe he's the Messiah, although many may believe it. Those who say he's the Messiah, some say he's actually God incarnate, and people say they're fanatics, etc. There is a well-known professor, David Berger, professor at in Brooklyn, and highly respected. He wrote a major book saying that Orthodox Jews should repudiate them and say they're no longer practicing Judaism. What they're practicing is more of a form of Christianity, because they believe the Messiah died and rose from the dead to continue his mission, and so on. So divisions in the Jewish community over this, all right? Yet with all the fanatical belief and all the passionate belief, they didn't report that he rose from the dead. You say, oh, okay, that's interesting. That's interesting. But what's the punchline? All right, here's the punchline. For many years, we've heard, well, look, there are various explanations for why the disciples claim that Jesus rose from the dead. You know, you had the Passover plot by Hugh Schoenfeld many years ago, and well, it was he swooned. Jesus didn't really die, he swooned. He appeared to die and then revived, and that's the resurrection account. Of course, that's been rejected for many reasons. Well, they just made it up. They just created it. They knew it didn't happen. They just created it. Cognitive dissonance. You believe the opposite. You know, you get a report that confirms the opposite of what you want to happen. Instead of being discouraged, you believe even more. It's a form of emotional and mental denial. All right, so that's what the disciples did. It was cognitive dissonance and nothing more. And we can psychologically explain it. Then people push back and say, but then if they knew it was a lie, or ultimately it was just some emotional thing, then at a certain point reality sets in. Why in the world would they end up dying for this faith? The ones who created a myth, what would they die for it subsequently? But here's what's so fascinating. Now hear me out. Hear me out, because it's very, very powerful. And we lay it out in the book in a way that I believe is really going to glorify the Lord. When you look at the followers of the Rebbe, they were expecting him not to die, or if he died, to rise. They're expecting him to be glorified. There was tremendous anticipation. There were people dancing in the street after he died because they were excited he was going to rise. They were waiting for it. They were looking for it. They were expecting it. They come up with all these different beliefs that he didn't really die, and so on and so forth. And yet, none of them say, none of their major rabbis, none of the people that are just the average followers, none of them say, yes, we saw him physically after he died. We saw him physically, we sat and ate with him. They're not saying that. Their rabbis aren't saying it. Why? Because it didn't happen. And because people do not come up with myths like that about dead leaders. Now, here's the contrast. When you read the Gospels, the accounts are very embarrassing. It makes the founders of the faith look bad. They were discouraged. They were hopeless. They were depressed. They were in fear. When women came, not the ones that you want to be the first witnesses, right? When women came and said, we saw him the grave's empty. We said, no, it couldn't happen. No, you're wrong. Okay. It was the last thing they expected. It was over. Yeah, he told them over and over, I'm going to rise, but they didn't get it. Their minds were closed. Their eyes were blinded. Their understanding was darkened. No, it's not. He's dead. It's over. It just faced the facts. We were wrong. We were deceived. We thought he was a miracle worker. We thought he was the Messiah. We thought he was the Son of God. Obviously, he's not, because he died. Well, they kept telling them they were going to die and rise, but they didn't get it. They were dense spiritually. And again, you don't record these things about your leaders and founders when you make them look that bad. It was the exact opposite of the situation with the followers of the Rebbe, who were convinced he's going to rise, who were waiting for him to rise, who were expecting him to rise, and he doesn't rise. This was the opposite. They weren't expecting it. They were downcast. They were distraught. His resurrection was a shock. So here we have a contemporary example. 20th, 21st century example, where you see the cognitive dissonance only goes so far. The denial of reality only goes so far. That's why you don't have all kinds of myths about other leaders resurrecting, no matter how much they were believed, no matter how much they were followed, no matter how much they were revered. And that's why, look, what's more emotional, what's more painful, what's more distressing than when you lose a close loved one? The pain, the agony, the sense of separation, the loss, it's the only way you can understand is having gone through it. And yet people might say, well, we're still connected spiritually, or we, you know, with seances we connect, or oh, no, I talk to my husband, I know he's been dead 10 years, but I talk to him every night. You know, people have these beliefs and these things. He appears to me in a dream. But how many people do you have saying, yeah, he's physically resurrected? Yeah, she physically resurrected. No, there's something sudden and definite and final and, boom, death. And that's it. So the Messiah dies. It's over. The disciples are depressed, discouraged, fearful, disheartened, downcast. His resurrection was a shock to them. And the reason they knew it was true was because they experienced it and saw it with their own eyes. It is the exact opposite of what happened with the followers of the Rebbe. Oh, yes, they've gone on with the movement. They're inspired by his teaching. That happens. I mean, Muhammad died, right? And his movement grew after him. And Buddha died, and his movement grew after him. And other, you know, Joseph Smith died, and his movement grew after him. Other people have had movements grow after they died, but not based on the resurrection of the one who died. Except here. And then, of course, we have the ongoing working of the Spirit to this moment, God saving and touching and healing and convicting and delivering people all around the world through the death and resurrection of Jesus, the Messiah. Oh, it's fascinating. In the new book, I get into Jewish traditions about a dying Messiah and ask, are there Jewish traditions about a rising Messiah? And then tell a story about the most influential false Messiah of all time in the 1600s, one of the craziest, most wild stories. It is beyond belief. You think, no, you're making this up. You had to make this. Okay, if that, no, you're making this up. It is so absurd. The story of Shabbatai Tzvi, called the mystical Messiah. And yet even with him, with this crazy, wild story that in certain circles persists to this day, even then, there were not accounts of him rising, of him resurrecting. Isn't that extraordinary? So I encourage you to be praying with me that God will use this book to touch and save many Jewish people. And as a Christian, as a Messianic Jew, as a follower of Jesus, Yeshua, you'll find the book to be really, really fascinating. I mean, the kind of thing it's a page turner. It's one of those books you'll find it to be a real page turner and one you're probably going to share with someone else. So again, if you'd like to get a signed, numbered copy, kind of a collector's edition, go to our website, askdrbrown.org. You'll see it right on the homepage. If you'd like to take advantage of the special offer to get $70 of free ebooks and materials when you order the book, go to drbrownbooks.com. And it'll give you all the simple instructions to order there. Okay, Jewish-related calls, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. We'll be right back.
want, for fire we plead.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.